Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, our award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss the worst TV characters that we love, and also those TV leads that are just kind of awful on their own. All right, there's a lot to unpack with that. Let's get on with the show. My name's Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm my fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
Woo! I'm number one now.
What the hell, Amanda just Sink?
Hello, hello.
And John Davenport. We're shaking it up.
I feel used and abused, and I don't know if I like it.
You got to keep people on their toes, man. That's what it is.
Since when?
Just understand it this way, John. You just put me like the lead, so it's leads that are just really bad.
Aw, he just, aw, look at that.
That was some...
But that's actually true.
Suck it, John.
That was hurtful, that was.
Next time I'm never helping you out on your damn half-hour power hour ever again.
Yes, you are. Shut up.
Hey, when people are listening to this, we should be coming up on the last episode of The Last of Us. So if you haven't listened to it yet, we have Patreon exclusive content for the half hour power hours, what John's calling his show, where they're talking about every single episode of The Last of Us from HBO. That's only available on patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider.
Also, I do want to remind everyone that now that The Last of Us is coming to an end, as you're listening to this, that we are going to be switching over into the Hollywood Outsider archive show of the half hour power hour. And how the archive show is going to work is that we want you to engage with us. So we're going to do a couple episodes that it's going to be different hosts stepping in and doing their pitch as to why a specific episode of a television show needs to go on the Hollywood Outsider archives. As in the archives is where you put the special episodes. And that special episode is something in which you decide whenever you want somebody to watch a show and they only say, I'll watch it, but I'm only going to give it one episode. This is the episode that you give them to prove to them that it's going to be worth their time. That's how good this episode has to be. So you're going to pitch it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to vote on it. And if it makes it, it's going to go to the archives. If not, well, sorry.
Who catches it?
Well, aren't you the catcher?
I'm just asking a question.
Who's the rye then?
Who's the what? All right. Well, with Scream 6 coming out, it kind of brings up a question. How many, I want to just talk about this. How many sequels are too many? Is it just when they start making bad ones, or is there like a finite number, like a trilogy and quit? What? Because I'm getting to the point where we got to start putting a cap on these things, man. I mean, movies are just having 20 sequels now. I don't know where we should draw the line. What say you?
Trilogy seems right, but you could always have two trilogies or three trilogies, you know, if you're Star Wars. So that was 9 movies there, plus 2 additional ones for 11. So technically Star Wars has more movies than the Fast series does.
I feel like you're just thinking out loud right now.
I am thinking out loud because I'm trying to figure out like what
isn't
what
that
makes
the
sense.
Point of this podcast?
I don't know. I don't know what just happened. I feel like we just took a trip in Troy's brain.
Well, because I was thinking like Fast 10 is like so many movies. Then I was like, wait, Star Wars has had 11. So, and I ultimately
like, you mentioned Fast 10, and here's the thing about the Fast and Furious series.
They're not real movies.
Right. The first one, standalone movie, doesn't need to have a sequel. The sequel, kind of a standalone movie, only refers to the first one. And the third one has nothing to do, barely, with the first three movies.
First two movies.
Right. And then the fourth one, they come back in, take all the characters, and they start designing this whole world of insanity where you can do crazy things. So, to answer the question, I think if you are bringing fresh and interesting stories to these characters, then sequels are fine. But if you start just throwing out sequels just for name recognition, that's when you start having problems. Look at the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Look at Friday the 13th. Any of those, look at Halloween, any of those movies in which they just don't care about source material and or the groundwork that's laid before it, and they just like let's do a bump of coke and figure out what the best story to do is here. When they start doing that kind of crap, that's when I'm out.
Like Halloween has literally had sequels and changed the entire storyline mm-hmm. 3 times now with
exactly.
Well, that's because Halloween created a multiverse, right?
They so, really have, yeah.
Jamie, the Jamie Lee Curtis is like one string, and then like other ones are a different string.
Jamie Lee Curtis has three strings. She's got three different versions of her same story.
There's three different versions of Jamie Lee Curtis, or you know,
the H2O version, the one where she has a niece or whatever, and then the most recent ones where we just pretend like all those other movies didn't happen. Whoops.
Right. Well, the H2O version, didn't she have a son?
Yeah, in H2O she had a son, and the new one she has a daughter. Yeah. Like at some point we need a law. What is Congress doing? Can they enact a law on this? And just like, let's have parameters, let's set them and say you can't, if you hit this mark where you're just pretending all the other movies didn't happen, it can't be a sequel anymore. You gotta make a new movie. You gotta make a new series.
You mean like when a guy dies in a car crash and then shows up six movies later?
I think that should count.
Hey.
I think Han is a prime example that we should have laws. Mm-hmm. Laws could have stopped that. And maybe also could have enforced The Rock and Vin have to get along if they want to get paid. Something like that. And
let's not go crazy.
Laws where tough guys can't put in their contract that they can't lose a fight. You're so tough, you can't lose a fight. Come on.
But I think this is a really good question because like I think about The Hobbit. Right. The Hobbit definitely needed two movies because it would have been too long to be one. But they were like, no, let's make three because the other one had three. And it's like, it needs to be like nice and buttoned up and stuff.
And money.
No, you don't need the third movie because there isn't enough content for a third movie. At the same time, if you think about The Last of Us, you know, there's a lot of content in the second game, but the second game is a time jump from the first game. And there's a whole bunch of stuff you could tell stories about in that interim period that could actually be really cool stories. So I don't know, like if I want made up stuff that wasn't in the original content because it didn't work for The Hobbit, but it might work for The Last of Us. So I'm torn.
I definitely don't think we should have like a finite number for franchises because some of them have gotten better over time. Fast and the Furious is an example. The beginning.
Well, I mean, they went up and now they're kind of.
Whoa.
No, that's fair. That's
they're careening down the
But
hill.
Imagine if we had said a trilogy is all you need and we ended at Tokyo Drift. That's where we left the series at.
Okay, there's a point there.
Fast Five definitely was the high point series. But
Trey was talking a second trilogy. So 4, 5, and 6, that would have been a great trilogy.
That's true.
It's when you went 7, 8, and 9.
7, 8, and 9 are basically like a trilogy.
Yeah.
They went sideways there a little bit.
But I don't want to put like that level of a cap on it. What I want is for us to have some sort of sensibility when it comes to mass producing these films for franchises. Like, does this make sense to continue the story, or are we doing this just to try to capitalize on and monetize based on the brand?
Well,
is it still relevant to the franchise, or are we just doing ridiculous shit? Like Halloween, I think, to your point, Aaron, is one of the biggest examples where like, how are we going to completely derail things? Like, we're going to say, here's the story set up for a bunch of movies. Let's introduce this film that is completely going against every single thing that was there in the last movie. And it's just going to be completely separate.
The last, like, 8 movies.
Yeah, that too. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the problem that I think we have to be able to address. And but the problem is people continue to pay for them. Like, we collectively continue to
look
watch them.
Look how stoked you are for Scream 6.
I am. I'm stoked for
and
it.
Now
I'm
they're going to New York, which that Jason did that and it did not go so well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're going to have to see how this turns out.
Ghostface takes Manhattan.
Scream 5 did a really great job of, like, you know, handing the torch over to a new group. And now they're going to take this story to a completely different location. And I think that's a great reboot of that so that you can actually do those sequels where 4 never should have been made at all.
Well, I disagree. I like 4 a lot, man.
I do like 4.
I think they whiffed the ending. They should have at the very least, either Sydney doesn't know that it's her cousin, and so therefore her cousin gets away with it that way, or Sydney died and she got away with it. Because I think that would have been a much ballsier ending. I think they really went safe with that ending.
They did.
It could have been a really cool ending. I do think it was a very safe movie for the most part, but I did like that one a lot. Plus, we get Hayden back. So, it gave us Hayden.
So, it's not all bad.
It's not. Not all bad. I wonder if Vin Diesel's going to let Fast really die. I mean, he's going
to
do that.
He doesn't seem to be letting go of the 3 movies that he's capable of putting out, or 3 franchises. So,
wait, what's the third one?
Good point. We've got Riddick.
Well, I guess Triple X.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe. That's, yeah. That's
I thought Riddick was coming back with a new movie.
It is. Yeah, Riddick's coming back. So it's Riddick and family.
Triple X and family.
Groot. X.
And Groot. Oh, yeah, Groot. Groot. Okay, mm-hmm. We got Groot. Half of the characters are all the same character, though.
They are. We are. Yeah. All right, so it's a year later. What do you guys think? Can you believe that the Oscar slap has become such a cultural moment for the world that we're... It's still something that we talk about. Will Smith pops in anywhere, people are talking about it. Chris Rock pops up, people are talking about it. The Oscars pop up, people are talking about it. Everybody's making slap comments. What do you think? Are we still surprised at this?
No, I'm not making the slap comments. I thought it was the greatest form of television entertainment in a long time when it happened. But it's like after 6 months, I was kind of like, whatever, moving on.
If you watch the Oscars, will you, I don't know if you are going to watch it or not, but if you do watch them, would you be thinking about that the whole time, or you wouldn't even cross your mind?
I don't think it would cross my mind. I think when Will Smith did the apology tour thing on YouTube, that wasn't really an apology, but a PR stunt. That's when I was kind of like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, that was definitely like, a PR stunt.
You lost your cool. You messed up. Move on. Take your lickings. No big deal. But I want to see Chris Rock host the Oscars now and just do the whole thing for the entire show, because that'd be awesome.
Just slaps every guest, every winner.
Yeah. Or every time he turns around, yeah, or every time he turns around, somebody just walks on stage just to slap him for the comedic value of it.
I think there's
feels painful.
There's some level of like distance between this incident that's happened and where we're at now, but at the same time it feels like the Oscars are reminding us of them or of that by introducing this crisis team. Who essentially?
Yeah, we should talk about that.
We probably should talk.
I mean,
about
it's
that.
A little. I mean, it came out a couple weeks ago, but the Oscars are they're literally right around the corner, and they assembled a crisis team so that if something like this happens again, they can handle it immediately. Well,
why they assembled the crisis team.
Why would you say they helped? They did it.
They assembled the crisis team because they realized that the Oscars are up against The Last of Us.
Stop
finale.
It. Jesus.
Oh, my gosh.
No.
Yeah, that's fair.
They did assemble it because if something else happens, they want to handle it immediately. And I'm like, why do you need a group of people to tell you a guy that hits another guy probably should be escorted out of the building? I don't care how big he is. I don't care how I'm literally on the stage. I mean, behind the curtain, all right, you can sort that out. You guys can tell, you can be fine for the next. But on the stage, you don't need to be told that. The only reason he got to stay is because he's powerful. That's literally the only reason. He's rich and powerful. Had nothing to do with anything else other than that. And if it would have been Joe Pesci, they would have made him leave. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
If it was Joe Pesci and they tried to make him leave, he'd be cursing so damn much, all we would hear of the Oscars is beep 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 beep.
Maybe, but they still would have made him leave. I'm just saying, Will Smith got to stay because he's Will Smith, and that's it. That's the only reason.
I think everyone was afraid of Jada, honestly. I think my thing with the Oscars and the slap and all that was when I realized that the Oscars were right around the corner, which again, I don't pay attention to the Oscars too much. The slap made it hard to miss last year. But at the same time, I'm sitting here and we're talking, we're having a normal conversation. Everyone is talking about the Oscars and it just suddenly hits me. Wait a minute. Didn't this shit just happen? How are we here again?
Yeah, well, because we didn't stop talking about it for months, us included. We're just as guilty as other people.
Oh, I stopped talking about it.
You didn't watch it, so you don't get an opinion.
See, that's go back. Who's living life right?
Kind of fair point. All right. Well, we'll move on. This episode won't be as long as other ones because we this is South by Southwest week. I'm heading South by Southwest. Amanda and I both are. Are we excited?
Woo! Hell yeah, we're excited.
Yeah. John's yawning. John's yawning because we're going because
he's jealous
to South by. He's just jealous. That's what it is.
Well, yeah, I was totally jealous. It has nothing to do with it. It's 9 o'clock at night.
All right. Well, we'll have some South by Southwest coverage here pretty soon. And I'm sure Amanda and I will probably watch the Oscars and report back on the podcast. Hey, before we move on to reviews, I just want to tell you guys that you can now get early access to 80 for Brady on digital. Today, Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, Rita Moreno, and Sally Field star as four best friends anyone could have, who go on an unforgettable journey to see their hero, Tom Brady, who I'm pretty sure is retired for sure this time, See him play in Super Bowl 51. This is a hilarious comedy about living life to the fullest, no matter your age. It's directed by Kyle Marvin, and 80 for Brady is on digital right now. It's available at participating retailers. It's rated PG-13 from Paramount Pictures. Saw this, reviewed it when it came out. We had a fun time with it. It's just fun. It's just fun seeing these ladies together and their antics and the mix of football. And Tom Brady, not a bad actor. Not a bad actor. Guy's got a future. All right. Well, you can check that out right now. 80 for Brady on digital right now. Now we can go into our spoiler-free reviews. All right, we're going to review Pinball, The Man Who Saved the Game, which is coming out on demand and I believe in limited theatrical release on March 17th. Before we do that, I want to mention Operation Fortune. I did see that. It's the new Jason Statham, Guy Ritchie movie about a special agent Orson Fortune and his team of operatives sent to recover this device and kind of thwart the sale of deadly new weapons technology that's going to disrupt the world. I just want to tell you, it's kind of bottoming out in theaters. It's got Aubrey Plaza in it as well, and Hugh Grant and Cary Elwes. It's a really fun movie. It's one of Guy Ritchie's most fun movies in a long time, I think. I mean, it's like a 6 out of 10 kind of movie. It'll be on demand soon. Probably wait, because I don't know how long it'll be in theaters, but definitely check that out whenever you get a chance to see it. Operation Fortune is actually a very enjoyable romp of a film.
I'm going to put that here. That Aaron said, don't go see it in the theater. Just wait for it to come home.
Well, because, I mean, there's so much. You got Creed 3, which is crushing the box office, right? You've got Scream 6 is coming out. You've got John Wick 4. You've got all this stuff coming out. Don't get me wrong. I think Operation Fortune is definitely worth seeing in the theater. It's like a Guy Ritchie Mission Impossible movie. It's a lot of fun. Aubrey Plaza is hilarious, and she plays off Jason Statham very well, very well. Josh Hartnett's in it as a movie star that's helping them with the assignment. They kind of blackmail him into helping. And Hugh Grant is just nuts in terms of his character. It's fun. I'm just saying I don't think it'll be in theaters very long. So by the time you hear this, it might already be out. That's how well it did not do in theaters. I just think it's worth checking out. But we want to talk about Pinball, The Man Who Saved the Game. That's coming out in theatrical release, like I said, limited and on demand March 17th. So you'll be able to get it on whatever streaming device you use. And we happened to see this at the Beloit International Film Festival. Troy and I both did. With the man himself that the story is based on, Roger Sharp was actually in attendance.
And his lovely wife.
And his lovely wife, Ellen, who is also part of the movie. Such a sweet story. Very sweet story. So here's the plot. The story is Roger Sharp is a young Midwesterner who moves to New York and he wants to be a writer. And along the way, he meets the eventual love of his life, Ellen. And it's a mix of their love story, how they came together, as well as his love of pinball and how he got involved with the game to help overturn a 35-year-old ban on pinball machines in New York City that was also carried across the country because it was enacted due to the fact that they thought pinball machines were essentially gambling. So they were trying to ban gambling. Now we got slot machines on every corner, which is funny, but that's irony for you.
It was specifically the gambling because a regular gambling machine had to be done by people of a certain age. Pinball was made to steal the kids' lunch money. Yeah. And the mob was coming in to prey on children. That was the whole thing about the law, was that it was about the kids. Something's got to be done about the kids, Marty.
Nice connection. All right. So you didn't know much about this movie going into it. I don't know how much you know pinball. I can tell you, I don't know anything about pinball. I am not a pinball fan, not a crazy pinball guy. I like video games, not much on pinball. Are you a pinball nut?
I knew about the law and the whole backstory behind the law, but I never heard about Roger Sharp and what he did to overturn it. So this was going in completely blind. And I have to say, man, this film, like, you go in thinking it's like a documentary and it's just shot in a completely different way that it's almost like you don't want to call it a mockumentary because that's not the right word because it's definitely not mocking the subject.
Sure.
But it's a different kind of way to do a documentary and it's freaking fantastic. So, so good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a movie all the way. Okay. So it's not a documentary in any way, shape or form, but the way that they're telling the story is Roger Sharp is portrayed by two different actors in the film. Like in the film itself, he's portrayed by two different actors, Mike Faced, who played Riff in the West Side Story remake, and Dennis Balsakaris, who plays the older version. And he's kind of like the modern day Roger Sharp narrating his own story. Neither one of them are actually Roger Sharp. They're just both actors playing Roger Sharp. But it's kind of a fourth wall breaking way to tell the story. And he often will cut in the middle of the scene and say, it didn't happen like that. And it's making humor out of the whole concept of how these kinds of biopics are told. And it makes it, I think, extremely entertaining.
Yeah, because it's not just Dennis on the screen as older Sharp, just narrating and dictating like you would see in an interview style. He's actually like in the movie, like almost like the conscience of younger Roger Sharp. So you're actually seeing the scene set up. So he's actually like walking you through kind of like a behind the scenes director commentary kind of feel. Mm-hmm. And it works out so perfectly. He's just another guy in the room. And then it turns and he breaks the fourth wall and starts talking to the audience about the situation that's currently happening. And it when you see it, it makes a total sense as it happens. And it fits into the flow of the story just so seamlessly that it doesn't take you out of it at any point.
So what did you think of the actors in particular in terms of the performances?
Captivating. Just absolutely captivating. Crystal Reed, I mean, gorgeousness aside, just her softness and her care and her eyes and the way she like just talks about her son Seth in the movie, and then the way that she watches young Roger just working with the book, and just she's just warm and loving the entire time. Even when they're fighting, she has this softness to her. And I thought that Crystal Reed did an amazing job portraying Ellen. And then Mike is just, I don't know, comedy gold in this movie. Mike is so fun to watch. Plus, he has to wear, Roger's got this amazing mustache, still has it when we saw the real Roger at the festival. Mm-hmm. And he plays this whole mustache thing off. Like, it's just like a whole character of its own inside of the movie. I thought Mike did an amazing job. Just really bringing the emotion and the frustration. He starts out a little bit kind of like the dorky guy. And then, he ends up being in New York on his own. He has to get a divorce from his original wife, who he ends up meeting in the University of Madison, Wisconsin. And then once that all takes place, he's just kind of like down on his luck, and you can see him. And there's just, it's an amazing sequence where he finally gets the card, right, from Ellen. And he's like, he's got the business card and he's supposed to call her and say like, hey, how'd the interview go? And just the sequence of like, he can't find the card. It's awesome. The use of the music in that moment is just fantastic. I really thought Christopher Convery, who played Seth, the young kid, totally nailed it. Just that whole like, I don't, you know, I'm here, but I don't really care. Like, just be good to my mom kind of feel. And then he has a real touching scene with Mike. When they're talking about their dads and what happened in their past and having a connective moment. And then we already mentioned how great Dennis was, you know, doing the narration. Just all around, all four of them just nailed it for me.
Yeah, I'm not going to repeat everything you just said, but I'll piggyback off it. The performances were pretty stellar. The mustache is almost its own character. And, you know, we met the man because Roger Sharp was actually at the screening, and he is very much still got that mustache. And it is a character of itself. It really should get its own screenplay.
Yeah, especially that when Ellen kisses Roger for the first time.
And she like pushes it back. She just
like pushes it back. She like gets to his lips. It's like, that's awesome.
It's so fun. And here's what I would say. I mean, if you think it's all about pinball, it's not. It's also a love story. If you think it's all about a love story, it's not. It's also about pinball. It's very much a well-balanced mix of story. And it's... Honestly, I really wish this thing would have gotten a huge theatrical release. I think this is a feel-good movie that was way better than I expected. It's nothing but enjoyable, and it tells you some history you didn't know while also getting to know some characters you didn't know. And also, you know, just knowing how Roger Sharp as a person is, and he's a great guy. He's a really sweet guy. Just everything makes it all come together. I mean, this guy never intended for pinball to be his life or his legacy, but he has embraced it with everything he has because he loved the game and he wanted to share the game with people. And that's why he got involved to begin with.
Yeah, I feel like going into this movie knowing nothing and then coming out of the movie and just there's beats in the movie where you sit there. Some critics would probably be like the snobby critics and being like, oh, it's predictable. Like, you could totally see that was coming. I look at it as,
no, that's the beat that's supposed to be there because that's just the natural way humans work. And then when it didn't happen, I was like, oh man, what a missed opportunity. But then they come back and use it in a completely different way. So you're like on the ride expecting them to do A. They end up doing like B, but then they come back to A. I think it was just great structure for the entire movie. This is something I think that hopefully the Academy picks up on. Like Everything Everywhere All at Once, you know, from last year, just something that was totally unexpected of how it was going to go. Because you're like, oh, it's a multiverse movie. It's like, you know, nobody's going to watch multiverse movies. And then it ends up being something totally different. They're like, this movie's about pinball. No one's going to care about pinball unless you're... No, this is a completely different movie than you expected. It should get a Best Picture nomination. At least...
Wow.
Maybe a documentary nomination or something. Because
It's a docudrama.
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 But I mean, it could be nominated in either one, and I think it could definitely pull a nomination. It was so good. Soup to nuts. Acting was good. Story was good. Pacing was good. Like, you cheered the entire time.
Yeah, it's a feel-good movie. We need more of those. So, and it's also written and directed by the Bragg brothers, who are kind of new to the scene. So, I can't wait to see what they do next. So, if $10 is the full price for Mission, what do you give Pinball, The Man Who Saved the Game, which will be out, again, on demand March 17th. So, keep your eye open for that.
And in theaters. You'll see it in the theater.
In theaters, yeah. If you can see it in a theater, do it, because that'll be fun with the crowd.
Yeah, especially if you're going with a group of friends. I mean, we were there with a bunch of people that we're friends with, and we all laughed. Like, it was great. It was such a great experience. I give it a solid 9. I can't stop talking about it.
Yeah, I'd give it 8.5. I think this is a great movie, legitimately. And film festivals, hit and miss. I mean, that's usually how film festival works. And sometimes you'll get some good ones. Sometimes you get some very good ones. Sometimes you get some awful ones. Occasionally you get great. This is great.
Super, super great.
Super great.
Yeah.
I wish I could throw a pinball term in here, but I legitimately know nothing about pinball.
I wish there was a return ramp so I could go back and watch it again.
Nice! And thank you to everybody that came out for the Beloit International Film Festival, beloitfilmfest.org, because it was a great event. We actually did wonderful. There were some great films. I'm glad everybody came out to see it. Next year, we'll be moving it from late February, early March to April. So it'll be warm. It'll be nice and warm. So it'll be April 5th through April 14th next year. So if you want to make some plans to come check it out, it's a very cool local festival. Special shout out to Scott Clark from The Gaming Outsider, who helped me put a pinball event together. Troy, of course, for coming to the event, and some other friends who came to the event. And Ty Nelson, thanks for coming out on the second pinball event. So, and he also took in several movies and had a great time. He's a longtime listener and friend, and glad to see him come out. And wish I would have had more time to spend with them, but these events are a little crazy. I kind of got to slot out the time. Okay, one other thing I want to mention before we move on. You know, we talked earlier about the Oscar smack. Well, I'm sorry, slap. It's a slap. Unless it's your face, then it's a smack. And Chris Rock dropped what he thought about the whole face smacking that went on and how he felt about Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. And that special, Selective Outrage, is on Netflix now. It dropped as a live special. I don't want to say I'm going to review it. I'm just going to tell you what I thought of it. I thought it was great. I thought Chris Rock crushed it. He had an hour of material that was really pivoting from different variations of kinds of selective outrage, you know, in terms of hot button topics like abortion and January 6th and, you know, the Kardashians. And he's doing it. And even his daughter, he's taking on his own kids to a degree. And he's kind of bouncing all over the place just to get everybody to understand where he's coming from. And then he addresses the elephant in the room. And he does mention it a couple of times, so it isn't like he doesn't know what's going on and whatnot. Man, I thought it was great. I thought how he handled it was very direct. It was pointed. This is what happens when you smack a comedian. What was funny, I guess, was it's a live event. And when he finally got to Will Smith, he was flawless with his jokes the whole time. He did fumble like one joke. I don't know if it's going to hold for the rewatch. Like if it's on Netflix and you go rewatch it, I don't know if they're going to edit it for that. But on the live special, he flubbed one joke. It was really quick and he recovered immediately. But it was interesting. And like, oh, I forgot this is live. You know, mistakes happen. But and if you didn't know, when a comic comes out and does material like this, you know, they've practiced it for months. They've toured the country. They've refined it. They've sharpened it. They've tried to make it as awesome as they could. That's what comics do before they do a Netflix special. And that's what he did. But yeah, he came out guns blazing and really made a lot of the points I think we made when it happened last year. It's just, you know, how you don't see some of those facets of it. You know, that's your call. Everybody feels how they feel about it. Definitely that's how I feel about it. I feel like this is a much bigger person picking on a much smaller person. And that's what Chris, you know, he pointed that out, you know, that he's one of the jokes he has was, you know, he makes movies with his shirt off. You know, if I'm getting open heart surgery in a movie, I'm wearing a sweater, things like that. So I thought it was really funny. The other guys haven't seen it, but I thought it was interesting and definitely punching back, you know, just saying, oh, no, I'm done with this. And it can't be a coincidence that as Jada Pinkett's hometown of Baltimore that he does this special. And can it? And a week before the Oscars and almost pretty much a week from when it happened last year. So, yeah, Rock came swinging. It was his time to swing back.
Wow.
$10 is the full price permission. I give Chris Rock Selective Outrage probably about 7.5. I laughed a lot. Okay, let's get on with the show. Let's go to our From the Outside In topic. We're going to discuss TV leads in two ways, both the roles themselves and the actors who play them. So you just finished its fourth season. And once again, people often forget that Joe Goldberg is one of the worst people on the planet. An absolutely awful dude. But people love him. People love him. So let's discuss awful TV characters that you cannot understand why people love, or maybe that you, hey you, hello you, love even though they're awful.
I mean, to be fair, Joe Goldberg is that guy where he has so many positive traits to him where it's like, man, that seems like a good guy, right? On the surface, before you really get to know the dark side of him, you're like, you know, he pays attention to his lady. He seems to be sweet and do some romantic gestures.
No,
he can seems I finish like, talking? Yeah, oh just God. Hold on.
You know, conversations. Do you I mean said other on people the
outside,
talk?
But you're not letting me finish. No. On the outside, you're not letting me finish my point. On the outside, he appears as that guy who would have it all together, who would be a wonderful partner, and all of those things. And I think there's a lot of people who are drawn to the romanticized side of him without really taking into consideration the dark and very concerning side of him, which is that he is a stalker and a murderer. Like, he does not care. And not to mention, at some point, ladies, he's going to fall out of love with you. And then he's going to fall in love with you, your best friend, your grandma, whoever it may be. Joe Goldberg has no limits. So characters that have some high points that people are able to overlook the bad parts of and seek out the good parts, things that fulfill them. I really think he's an attractive man, right? We throw an attractive man into a role and we make him sweet and romantic, and then somehow that justifies the wrongdoing. Like, it's that makes
literally
it okay.
Only because he's good looking. If this guy looks like
Steve Buscemi.
If this guy looks like Steve Buscemi, and every time a lady turned around saw yep. Steve Buscemi behind her going, hello, fellow kids, I think very much that they would be calling 911. But because it's Joe Goldberg, oh, it's okay. I mean, he's a handsome fella. He's got some, you know, but he's always behind them. He's always following them, and he's always got some lame-ass excuse, and nobody questions it. I don't understand the love there. This is supposed to be the kind of person that every woman says they don't want anywhere near them, but they keep saying how much they love the guy. It's weird.
I mean, the amount of money that he ends up costing these ladies that he stalks because they have to keep going to the store to buy underwear is just atrocious.
Truly. I mean, that shit gets expensive. Inflation these days? My goodness, Joe.
But not just Joe. There's so many other characters that are awful and we end up loving them. You know, Jax Teller, I think, is a prime example. Jax Teller and Sons of Anarchy. Really, I mean, kind of a prick and a criminal and da-da-da-da-da. And everybody loves him. I'm sure that's because he's handsome, too. But everybody seemed to love him.
House.
Yeah, Doctor. There you go. Why do you love House? You love House.
I love House because I as long as he's not helping me, he's hysterical and he's funny and he's brilliant and smart, but he doesn't give a shit about nothing or nobody. He really doesn't. All he cares about is solving his puzzle and moving on and eating Vicodins like they're M&Ms. That's the only things he really cares about. So,
oh, you missed one.
What?
He wants to get in Cuddy's pants.
He got into Cuddy's pants.
That's true, he did.
Spoiler alert.
He did. It's been out for like 20 years. Come on.
Yeah. But as far as like a character is concerned, he is a fun person to be able to watch from the outside. I would throw him down a set of stairs if I had to deal with him in person.
I feel like Monk's the same way. Monk's, but also he's... I have a certain amount of empathy for him because I know he's suffering with an affliction. But on the same token, I mean, he's also kind of insufferable to mm-hmm. everyone around him. And he also acts very selfishly very often as his, you know, as the obsessive compulsive detective. You never watch Monk. But there's a way that Tony Shalhoub plays him that just makes him so endearing, even though he's kind of a miserable guy. I mean, he often is self-obsessed and everything has to be focused on him. But yet, he really does care about other people in his own weird way. So it's easy to kind of still root for him. And you want him to get out of that thing. And I think a lot of that has to do with performance. I think all of these characters, a lot of that has to do with their performance, not just because they're good looking. I really feel like if right. you have the charisma to pull it, I mean, just look at Dexter, Michael C. Hall.
Yeah, he's one of my top picks.
I really don't think you can duplicate that.
Mm-mm. You know, I'm going to say another one that collectively this entire podcast is going to gasp at Sean from Psych.
I was going to say that too. I was going to say that.
Really?
Sean
it was rolling in my head, but he seemed he's just too likable.
I love right. him as a show character, but if I were having to deal with him as his girlfriend, his father, or his partner, I would quite literally have to murder him because he always...
Well, who would solve it?
Honestly, the detectives. But
well,
he
no Carlton can't figure out shit, so I'll be all right.
That's true. But he just does so many like childish, very selfish things because he thinks he's always right. And there are many times he is right, sure, but he takes so many wrong turns often to get there, and it's always at the expense of Gus.
Does ruin like every relationship Gus has.
Truly.
up until the movies.
Is it hilarious?
Gus's pickup lines, he doesn't really need any help from Sean.
Okay, hold on. Right. Gus picked up Sarah Sahi, so...
He did, and Gus and Sean ruined it.
Sean ruined it.
Yeah.
So he's a character that all of us here love to watch because of his antics, but if he was somebody in your life... Tell me you would put up with him.
Yeah.
Would you really put up with him?
I'd probably rather hang out with Gus, honestly.
Right.
Yeah. He's a more stand-up dude.
Yeah, Gus is really there. You know, he has got your back no matter what. He's proven that on how many seasons of that show that he'll always back up Sean, even if he's got to call him out on his bullshit. But Sean, I think my problem with the show after about the fourth or fifth season. I needed to take a break from the abusive relationship that it is watching Sean on screen just because. He is kind of terrible to most people, even though he's charming and great mm-hmm. on screen. And I love James Rodriguez and what he does. The whole character himself, I needed to take a break for a little while.
I mean, I loved him all the way through. So maybe I just love awful people.
But you love him from a distance, though. Another one, Marty Bird.
From a distance.
In Ozark?
Yeah, that's fair, because Marty...
He put his whole family in this situation.
I literally liked Marty the whole way, even though he really ruined so many lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong, his wife is way worse.
She's incredible, but I never liked her. I was going to say, I've never enjoyed
way
her.
Way worse.
What'd you say, Troy?
Just way worse.
Yeah. Way worse.
Maybe she can fit in the other side of this question category, which is the people we don't understand why they love, because there are people who do love her as a character. And I'm like, how can you possibly love her?
I think people love people that they love. You know, it's kind of like Joffrey. You don't know why you love him, but you love him because you hate him.
No.
Well, no, this is different. You love him because he's so good, he's so at, good at being bad. Bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
he is just so good. He hits all the notes perfectly. That's why you love him. You hate him at the same time, but yeah.
But in terms of Ozark, Jason Bateman, I think, has the hardest performance, and mm-hmm. nobody ever gives him credit for, because he keeps us on his side through that whole show, even though he's just as guilty as Wendy, because he's going yeah. along with it. Even though she's getting the best of him and whatnot, he's still going along with her.
But he also makes plenty of decisions that inevitably affect everybody else. And we, like you said, we're still on his side. We still support him. We're still like, whatever you got to do, Marty, we believe in you.
What about you, Troy? What are your, why do you love awful characters?
I mean, I just think they're just interesting people. You sit back and you just try to understand how people operate on a regular basis. You know, why does this person seem like the goody two-shoe type? Why does this person seem like the barbaric asshole type? And just understanding those personalities. And when you sit there and you think about these types of characters in television, they have to be smart. They have to be calculated. They have to be, I guess, I want to say like A-type, you know, Tiggers to the Poos in the rest of the episode. It's just interesting to watch how their process works, because at the same time, you're like, man, I wish I could be like that sometimes, but not the dick side of it.
Makes sense.
It's like a puzzle figure. Like when you look at a house, it's like, it's a puzzle to figure out, why is he such an asshole, yet he's so freaking smart that he can't get out of his own way sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good point. There's even characters for me that I fully understand why they are the way they are. And to me, that's justifiable enough for them to be who they are. So John Bernthal's The Punisher, Frank Castle. Yeah, I get it.
I wouldn't call him awful, though.
He's not great.
He's not killing innocent people. He's just misunderstood. He's angst ridden.
But that's the same thing as Dexter. They're hurting people who deserve it.
Dexter's also feeding his desire to kill people.
But this is feeding...
Punisher just happens to be good at it.
But this is feeding Frank's need for justice. And again, like, if you think about our societal expectations, he's defying that.
Well, by that token, John Wick is an awful human being.
Probably.
Well, but they're always attacking him. So it's on them.
It's defense. But I'm just saying, we still love those characters because we can justify their actions. Even though we know if somebody in the real world were to do that, we would feel completely different. We would not be like, oh, your dog got killed, so you went out and you murdered like 1,300 people. No, man, you don't get to just be an assassin because your dog got killed.
That's him before his dog got killed.
Yeah, you can. Have you met Aaron's wife? If that dog got killed, yeah. Aaron's wife would take people out and right.
I mean, whatever, across the state however line. However you say John Wick in Spanish. all right, so
John Wick.
Who's your favorite awful TV character, Troy?
But the first one that popped into my mind was Arvin Sloan from Alias.
Oh, he's a good one. Yeah.
The man is just ruthlessly despicable, and it's so great to watch him just, for first of all, Ron Rifkin as an actor, right? Just chew the material is dynamite. And then as the story goes along and you see what happens to Arvin Sloan's fate at the end of the show, it is like the most perfect ending you could possibly have for that character. Just delicious, delicious. Rumpelstiltskin from Once Upon a Time. He was another one. It was just like you loved watching him on the screen, even though he was such a dick for so many seasons in that show.
I didn't watch that show. Is that a good show?
The first couple seasons were actually pretty decent.
No, it's not.
The first two seasons or so were good.
Well, isn't there like six or seven, though?
There were sixth of the original, and then they tried to reboot it and it didn't work.
So over half of it wasn't good by your own account.
No, because it switched up gears when it got to they brought in Wizard of Oz and Frozen, and it was like, no, now you're just picking on things that are popular to try to shove them into the show, and that didn't work. So end of season three is where it was like still on the right track.
Sure.
And then four just kind of
overall, you know, it's an interesting concept for a show. And for regular TV, it's fine, I guess, but it's dumb.
I thought Once Upon a Time in Wonderland was almost a little bit better because it was focused. It was like a spinoff that they did.
All right. Well, I didn't mean to make a whole little fairy tale tangent, but go ahead. Yeah. What else you got?
And then Serena Vanderwoodson from Gossip Girl. Mm. I mean, just conniving, mm-hmm. manipulative, you know, rips on her boyfriend, rips on her best friend, rips on Penn Badgley, who becomes Joe. Mm-hmm. Like, leave Joe alone. All right, Serena.
She started it. She was the catalyst.
She's right. Exactly.
Started it.
Especially if you know how Gossip Girl ends. But at the end of the day, like, Serena is just captivating, not in partly because it is Blake Lively, but just captivating in how she delivers the stuff she delivers on screen for all of the seasons of Gossip Girl that were so good. So good. But I would say Blair on that same side, right? Leighton Meester's, you know, yin to Serena's yang. She was just as conniving and bitchy in that show. Yeah. And it was just fascinating to watch Leighton Meester play that character.
Pretty much any CW show, Pretty Little Liars, Vampire Diaries, anything like that.
But it wasn't at the same panache as the
no,
Upper East sure. Side Gossip Girl people, for sure.
Yeah, I didn't go as far into my list that Troy did. I have two that I came up with that I liked a lot. One of them, the first one I want to talk about is Mad Men's Don Draper.
Mm, he's a good one.
Yeah, played by John Hamm. Really good. And he's really good because there's a bit of a mystery to him and who he is. And but at the same time, he is the epitome of what the 60s and the 50s, 60s and 70s were all about when it came to being a man. And I loved his delivery. I loved the way he engaged with people. He is so smarmy and dirty, and yet at the same time has a class and an air about him that he is faking the entire time. And I'll never forget one of my favorite bits from that show, which was when Elizabeth Moss' character is like complaining that he never thanks her for the work that she does. He never appreciates her. He never puts her in front of him as far as someone who created something, and he turns around and looks at her and says, "That's what the money is for." Mm. And it's brilliant because on one side you have somebody who's complaining because their jobs they're not feeling appreciated at work, and the other person's point of view is, "Well, I pay you; you're supposed to work," you know. But also there's another sweet moment between those two characters. Well, not really a sweet moment, but where he is talking to her because she gives up something pretty big at one point, and she's laid up in the hospital. And he and her have this conversation in which he essentially tells her that all the things that she feels like she's done that are wrong and dirty and will never lead her anywhere right, he tells her to bury it because she can move on. And yeah, so that's why Don Draper is one of them. I really think he's a great, great, terrible character, but so much fun to watch because of his depth. And then on the funner side, because I need to throw a little bit of fun in this, Lily Aldrin from How I Met Your Mother. She is a terrible person, and I get it why she has friends and why there's this group of people, but Lily Aldrin is selfish, she's conniving, she's hypocritical, she is massively manipulative. She is not the kind of person you should really want in your life, but the way she was portrayed, the way she comes across on screen, she's always so sweet and nice at the same time. She's just a great, awful lead character.
That's good. Amanda, do you have any left?
No.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
I worked him into natural conversation.
That's very good. Okay, so I'm going to skip the ones that are painfully obvious. The Dan Fielding, that's obvious. Walter White, obvious. Mm-hmm. Everybody will talk about that. So Harvey Specter from Suits.
Oh, good one. I was thinking
Louis Litt could be on there too. But Gabriel Mott played Harvey Specter, and Harvey Specter was an absolute dick who was just so arrogant and pompous. But he also, I mean, he had some soft sides here and there. But for the most part, most of the series, he's really just full of himself and arrogant and just kind of a prick to everybody. Loved his performance. He's very smooth, very slick. Kind of, I really dug that. Then there's some classics. Louis De Palma on Taxi. Danny DeVito. I I really wish more people have seen Taxi, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't remember Taxi. But Louis De Palma was one of the worst human beings ever to be on a television show, if you watched it. But I never not liked him. Like, I always waited for him to show up because he would always say something funny. He was always, I mean, he was just basically this little guy with a Napoleon complex and working at a cab company and just ruining everybody's lives. But I loved him. He was so funny. And then my other favorite is Elaine from Seinfeld.
Hmm.
She's an awful human being. Absolutely awful. Well, actually, everybody in that cast is kind of like they're awful human beings. Yep. But she always made me laugh the hardest. Julia Louis-Dreyfus has impeccable comic timing. She's kind of, you know, a goddess when it comes to comedy. And she made me love that character, which is hard to do because Elaine was so full of herself.
Oh, how did I forget? Madeline Stowe played Victoria Grayson in Revenge. That character was outstanding because she was so vile and so disgusting to her family, to Emily Van Camp's character, to her husband. But it was like you just wanted to watch every single scene she was in because you didn't know what kind of crazy batshit stuff she was going to do.
Sure. Well, that's good. All right. Now we're going to flip a script. And we're going to go to the worst TV lead actors on a hit TV show, meaning it can't be just one season because to me, one season means everybody knows that they sucked. It has to have at least like three seasons. And you just couldn't understand how the show kept going because the lead actor was that bad. Think David Caruso, CSI Miami. Think him. Think him constantly taking his glasses, sunglasses off when he has a ridiculous pun to drop. That's what I'm talking about. Lead actors that probably shouldn't have been there.
Well, you know, I'm gonna catch a lot of hate for this. I feel like, and it may be deserved, but it may not be. It depends because last summer I sat down and watched the entirety of Quantum Leap, and it came to mind as I'm watching it. Scott Bakula is not a good actor.
What?
Yeah, he is not.
You're on crap.
Yeah, I'm with Troy on this one. You should probably tell the bear to give your cocaine back.
In Star Trek,
he was terrible in that too. Don't even get me started. I watched a couple episodes with him in there.
The premise of Enterprise was bad, but he was good as the captain.
He's a good actor, man. I don't agree with you on this.
I don't find him to be a good actor. I don't find him to be engaging. I find him to be so much milquetoast. The only reason why he worked for so long in Quantum Leap is because you can see him be anybody.
But he still had to play those characters. I mean, the show ran 5 years and was beloved. I don't know about this one.
The concept of acting is to change yourself into something else. And he had to do that every single week into a completely different person.
No,
that makes him like one of the best actors of all time.
I don't know about that one, but...
Like he wasn't exactly this the different person every single time. He was still him. He was still Scott Bakula. And occasionally when he was in a different character, maybe he'll throw a slang in there and it'll feel weird. And he just doesn't have the gravitas or the whatever it is. He is missing something huge especially in Quantum Leap. He's missing something huge to be a lead actor. I'm surprised that nobody... Oh, I'm not surprised. I'm the only one who probably sees this because I sat down and watched nothing but Quantum Leap for 2 weeks, but it is...
Every episode. So, I mean, I think I have a good grasp on the Bakula.
Yeah, no, I think you're wrong.
Maybe you're actually wrong. You just consumed too much Bakula in one time.
Maybe. But if he was such a great lead, there's no such thing as too much Bakula.
Well, you know what? I'll piggyback off there and shut, because one of mine is going to make you upset. How about that? Okay. Josh Radnor, Ted Mosby, whatever the hell his name is, on How I Met Your Mother is horrible.
Screw you, Aaron. That was my pick.
Well, sweet. Well, unite, because he's a horrible actor. He's a horrible actor.
Horrible.
No comic timing at all. He sucks. Sorry, Josh, if you're listening.
I so agree with you, unfortunately. Josh Radnor was the weakest part of that show.
How do you guys love the show when the guy is this bad? He's so bland.
Because Barney Stinson. All you got to say. Right. Barney
It's not
Stinson.
Good, though.
The whole rest of the cast is something worth watching. Josh Radnor was the weakest link. I'll give you that.
Goodbye.
He was the MacGuffin. You needed him to be the center point in order for all the other actors to do their thing. But he was a whiny bitch.
That's true. I mean, like, that's he is another one of those characters or actors where he doesn't stand out so much. It's kind of like Bella from the vampire, stupid glowy vampire Twilight movies. Yes. You know, that character does not stand out very much, so people can easily see themselves in that position. Josh Radnor as Ted Mosby, you're kind of in the same thing. You can see yourself easily as Ted Mosby.
Hmm. And unfortunately, it's kind of true about Josh too, because I watched another show that he did called Rise, where he was an English teacher turned into the drama club teacher, and they were going to like revive Spring Awakening, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else in that show was just captivating, and he wasn't. And it only lasted one season, so...
He's also on Hunters, which I keep on meaning to watch, but I have not yet.
I still haven't finished that either.
Man. So did you have anything else, Troy, that I didn't steal? So I don't feel as bad.
I said Will Schuster in Glee.
Will Schuster? Like, which character is that? Which character?
He's the teacher. He's the teacher that runs the Glee Club.
I didn't mind
him
so much.
He's like having problems with his wife. He's like trying to diddle the teacher down the hall. He's like supposed to mold these children. He can't really sing that well, actually. And he just fights with Sue all the time. It's like he was just so unlikable in the show. But he had to be there to drive the class forward in order to rally the troops.
Hmm.
But just like watching paint dry whenever he had lines and was on screen.
It's boring to watch paint dry. Amanda, did you have?
Well, since we're speaking about Glee, the Rachel Berry, who is played by Lea Michele, I cannot stand her in that show. I really was like into it for a little bit, and she is the reason I stopped watching it. I just felt like her character was so pretentious and annoying and selfish, and just I could not stand her.
Was it because of Lea Michele, or was it because of the character itself? Because the character was supposed to be written that way.
It's Lea Michele being Lea Michele as this character. I feel like that's just, to me, it felt like that's just who she was. And I couldn't stand it.
I don't know. I paid $260 to see her and she was sick. So I have no idea.
Oh, you paid for Funny Girl and she wasn't there?
Yeah, she got sick because she did the Macy's Day Parade 2 days earlier. And then she got a cold. And I saw the understudy, who was much better than Lea Michele ever would have been. Sure, Lea Michele could sing, but the understudy actually had the Barbara flair and, you know, just moved on the stage better. So
you know who...
I think I won out in that deal, to be honest.
A lot of people, whenever I say I don't like Friends, right, because I hate Friends, I'm just not a fan of that show. Never have been. I'm glad it's one of the most popular comedies of all time. I don't find it funny. Big reason?
Ross.
That's what... David Schwimmer. Yes, I can't stand David Schwimmer. He's not a good actor. And every scene that he's in takes me completely out of that show and makes me never want to watch it again.
There were only two things he did in that show that were worth his time on the show, and that was Pivot and We Were on a Break.
Those are good moments. Another one.
There's only been two things that I've seen David Schwimmer in that I appreciated him in, which is the OJ thing and Band of Brothers.
Really?
He was fantastic in Band of Brothers.
He was pretty good. I remember Band of Brothers. I don't know if he was fantastic.
I mean, you're supposed to hate him because he was such a slimy dirtball, and he did that very well.
I just feel like his comedy is not funny. I mean, all those other guys are like hyper realized characters. I get that. But I mean, I don't know. He just drove me insane. It was like nails on a chalkboard every time he spoke. I was like, ugh. And you know how it is when a character grates on you, that you just starts to grate on you even more because your wife always has that freaking show on as background noise. So you got to hear his stupid dopey voice.
One that I can't stand is Nina Dobrev, who plays Elena in Vampire Diaries.
Oh, I can stand Nina Dobrev.
She's cute, sure. She's also a really shitty actress. Like, she is not.
I've seen her in so
actress.
Many things, and I loved her. And there was that.
Yeah, I like Nina Dobrev.
I cannot. She is just so flat to me in her performances. She's the exact same person all the time. The only difference is occasionally they throw glasses on her to make her the sexy lady.
That helps. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys are just thinking from the Final Girls.
Yeah, Final Girls, she's really good. I think she's funny.
We're talking about Vampire Diaries.
The third Triple X, she was really funny in that.
We're talking Vampire Diaries. TV shows. Didn't watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just said
that David Schwimmer was good in Band of Brothers, but he's not good in Friends.
Yeah. Right. We're talking about other parts. We're just saying, hey, maybe it's not a bad actor. Maybe it's just a bad part. You know what happens?
Yeah, that's all.
She was very, very annoying in that.
Maybe, or maybe you just have a problem with Nina Dobrev, who is a national treasure.
Show me on the doll where Nina Dobrev hurt you.
No, actually, I follow her on Instagram, all that good stuff, but she was not good in that show.
Well, Amanda, would you back me up on Archie Andrews from Riverdale?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would. You know, like, probably not to the point where, like, I wouldn't watch the show, but I can definitely see where you'd be coming from.
Especially with the Red Circle season. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I don't remember enough of that show to care. I really don't.
Stephen Amell probably fits that bill, too, from...
From what? Stephen Amell from
You're just
what?
Jealous you can't do a salmon ladder. That's all this is. I've never been able to do it. I hate Stephen Amell and his beautiful body.
Were you going to actually say Stephen Amell in Arrow?
Yeah, Oliver Queen is a patronizing ass.
Yeah, the character is, okay, but Troy, he was good in it.
He was actually really good in it. Before it became the Arrowverse.
You could have mentioned
Arrow
him in the previous part,
show.
Maybe.
Jealous of his abs. That's all this is.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
He just wasn't it for me because of the whole, like, I watched the whole Tom Welling, you know, Smallville's, and I was just like, why didn't you just keep the same character going?
Justin Hartley is less patronizing than freaking Stephen Amell is? And the answer to that question is no. No, he's not.
I don't know the answer to the question because I don't remember. I watched Smallville, but I barely remember Justin
Hartley.
Yeah, I don't remember this character either. Well, I remember the character, but I don't remember Justin Hartley's performance. Tom Welling was good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I've got one more that is probably the most controversial.
Oh, boy. I love when people say something's controversial.
So one of my least favorite shows of all time is a show that was actually already mentioned on this podcast.
Sex and the City.
No. Oh. I said it was already mentioned on this podcast.
Oh. Well, Sarah Jessica Parker sucks. I just want to throw that in there. Go ahead.
That's fair. I do like the show, though. Somebody from Seinfeld, because I hate that
Jerry
show.
Seinfeld is not a good actor, if that's one.
Well, no, that's fair.
Okay.
But really, Michael Richards as Kramer.
I am not with you at all.
I know.
He's great.
I know. I know.
He's amazing.
He's the one reason to watch Seinfeld.
No, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a reason to watch it.
I'm sorry. He's the second reason to watch Seinfeld.
And also Jason Alexander.
Also awesome. Okay.
I cannot stand... Maybe it's a character
thing. The only
bad
actor is Jerry Seinfeld.
I already acknowledged him.
I know, but I'm like, Kramer, he was the only one that was really acting. He was acting every day.
It just drove me crazy. I just wasn't a fan.
True. You're right. It's controversial because it's nonsense.
I know. I can't do it. I'm aware. I just don't like it. It took me out of the show. I was like, I don't need to watch this.
I mean, I'm not defending Michael Richards because he throws words around he shouldn't throw around. But as
true
Kramer, he was great. Did you like Seinfeld, the show, at all?
No, I said this is literally one of my least, I hate the show.
Maybe
I
you should try
Seinfeld.
It again. Let's just try it again.
I've tried it so many times over
you should
the years.
You should try it just as much as you tried Friends or something like that. Just give it the same sort of.
I'm not a crazy Friends show watcher, so that.
What about How I
me.
Met Your Mother? What about that horrible show? How about that one?
I've seen it.
What the fuck is the matter with you?
It's horrible.
The show is not horrible.
It's not.
It's not horrible.
It was so good.
I have never had a spinoff
of another show.
Eight episodes total. I've watched eight episodes total. Haven't laughed one single time. And if I hear someone quote,
Legendary, or did you watch it later in life?
Legendary. It's like the only joke anyone can ever quote from that show. That's what I think of it.
I'm constantly quoting jokes from that show and nobody gets them.
Yeah, because they're not funny. That's why.
Are funny. You're
no,
a monster.
Not. That show sucks.
The freaking slap bet alone
the
is
The slap
worth
bet is
show.
Amazing.
I watched that episode. Didn't laugh. Didn't laugh. I'm sorry.
There's five of them because it's a slap bet. Five different slaps. That's not one episode.
Oh, well, I just saw one episode where they talked about it and it wasn't funny.
So I assume the other four.
You have to watch the episodes where you don't know where the slap is coming because it could come at any time.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not. Eight's good. We're good.
And plus, the last episode,
we've already all three agreed that the lead is not good, that he's a terrible actor. Why would I want to watch a show that's not funny and has a terrible lead? I don't understand the salient point here.
You do that all the time.
Name it. What?
I don't know.
Exactly. Well, there's a point with no point to be made.
Right.
Nonsense. Look,
the only reason the reason why How I Met Your Mother is amazing is because of people showing up in that show, like William Zabka.
Okay.
That's true. How I Met Your Mother shows up.
If the show isn't funny, I don't care.
But how he shows up is what makes it amazing.
I don't care.
Right. And the reason why we have a resurgence of Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid.
It was all over YouTube it was all over the internet long before How I Met Your Mother did it. They did it because it was all over the internet. That's true.
This is a chicken or the egg.
No, it's not. It was all over the place before then. That's been going on forever, if he was the bully or not. That's not something How I Met Your Mother created. They just capitalized on it.
Once it landed on How I Met Your Mother, then they're like, yes, let's make the show.
Yeah, that's why it took like a decade before it happened. They were trying to make this project pop, waiting for the right moment. You guys are funny. funny. All right. Well, there's also
How I Met Your Father is actually pretty decent, I have to say.
How I Met Your Father?
Yeah, I didn't think it would work, but it's working.
That's the one with
Yes.
What's her name? What's the lead's name?
Hillary Duff.
Also bad actress. Yeah. Okay. So
I'm not paying attention to her.
I don't agree with that.
We asked our group, you know, if they can think of anybody for either their favorite annoying or favorite worst character, favorite or a bad TV lead. Lauren Thomas Williams. I know folks really couldn't stand Denise Huxtable on A Different World, and the same with Zoe on Grown-ish. I like Denise Huxtable on Different World, but I mean, I do know, didn't they write her off like after one season or something like that? Worst TV lead, Piper from Orange is the New Black.
That's fair. I can see that.
But he also says Kevin Spacey from House of Cards. And as much as I don't like Kevin Spacey's character, I can't see that to save my life. I mean, he was great on that show.
Yeah. But to the point of it, it's also characters you love to hate.
Well, he said this is the worst TV lead part.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
But Piper? I can see Piper.
I can see Piper.
Mm-hmm.
Jen Ryan said Jax Teller from Sons of Anarchy is her answer for the number one. And her answer for bad TV lead, Catherine Winnick from Big Sky.
Really?
I like her on Big Sky, even though I don't understand her wardrobe very much.
I like her.
Her wardrobe is always the tightest pants she can find and a metal t-shirt.
She's
a cop. It's weird for a cop. I don't know if that's how you show up to a scene.
It's fine. I like her, though.
I like her, too.
She was okay in that first season.
I mean, there's really not a lot that goes on in there. I will say, I want to add, because I said Suits earlier for Harvey Specter. On the same token, I don't think Patrick Adams is a very good actor who plays Mike Ross.
I think his character is worse.
He had no range. I just felt like he was very middle of the road the whole series.
His wife.
Okay. I don't know who his wife is.
Average.
Okay. Is her name Average?
Yeah.
Well, way to pull that out of your ass. Okay. That's cool.
She was in Pretty Little Liars. I don't know how to say her name. Troyan Belisario. Ugh, I slaughtered that.
Yeah, you sure
Shay
did.
Mitchell, obviously, was a higher success than she was, but...
Who's Shay Mitchell? Who are these people?
Shay Mitchell is the only hot one from Pretty Little Liars.
I've never seen Pretty Little Liars.
You've seen Shay Mitchell. She was literally in You. Anyhow.
Okay.
I just wanted to call out, his wife is a worse actress than he is, but they're both mediocre then.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to movie innuendo. But remember, you can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group, or we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Movie innuendo is where all our hosts pick some non-sexual lines from any Scream film. This is the Scream edition, and deliver them as sexual innuendo. Then the hosts vote on Who has done this the most effectively? Amanda, Scream is your favorite franchise. You can go first. We'll go Amanda, Troy, John, me. Amanda, Troy, John, me. So, Amanda, go ahead. What's your first line? Tell us what movie it's from.
All of them.
Okay.
And it is from Ghostface.
Okay.
Hello, Sydney. Versus hello, Sydney.
If you got to explain it, not turned on. Just like Troy?
I don't feel a tickle.
I don't remember what movies they're from, but this is from Sydney. It's always hard being friends with you.
Okay.
Alrighty then.
All right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Johnny?
Nice welt, sweetie.
What Peyton the fuck? Oh, boy.
All right. I'll take that. Mine is from Scream 1. My mom and dad are going to be so mad at me.
Oh, I was going to take that one, too.
I love that one.
That's a good one.
All right. Back to you, Amanda. Second chance.
All right. This one is from the first. Tatum is who the quote's from. Billy and his penis don't deserve you.
Jeez. All right. That's better. That's better.
That is not an innuendo.
Well, she's trying to tell her friend, like, he doesn't deserve you. But no, she's like,
I get it.
Okay.
I get it. But there's no innuendo in there.
Yeah, it's pretty much implied.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Troy.
This is from Stuart. Looks like you fingered the wrong guy again.
Nice. That's the one.
That's the one. That's a pretty good one. All right. This is Sydney Prescott says this. You sick fucks. You've seen too many movies.
Well, when you think about Pornhub, yep. I get that adds up.
Last one. Mine's the Sydney. God, why don't you stop your whining and get on with it?
You know, I think I've heard people say that to me before.
Oh, Jesus, John.
All right, take a vote, Mando. Who's your vote? Who's a winner?
Pick a
winner.
I'm torn between my mom and dad are going to be so mad at me just because I love that quote so much. And I think it was Troy's with the fingering. I think I'm going to go with the fingering.
I'm going to second the fingering, Bradley.
I'm going to go with my mom and dad are going to be so mad at me.
Could you imagine if someone said that, like, mid-hump?
Somehow the words mid-hump made it worse.
Would you want me to say slide in?
Troy, what's your pick?
I mean, I'll vote for myself.
I like the welt one, too. I don't remember that in a movie, but it worked.
I do.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was Tatum.
It's the first
Riley
one, right?
I don't know, but listeners, hit us up on social and tell us which one you think was the sexiest. There you go. At By Popcorn or Facebook or anywhere else. That's fine. That's going to do it for this episode, guys. Next time you hear from us, it'll probably be Oscar season. So.
It'll be South by Southwest.
And South by Southwest.
Yeah, we've got a lot coming up. South by Southwest reviews. See who punches who in the Oscars. It's going to be great.
There's a lot coming up. A lot coming up.
And The Last of Us finale. We'll have to talk about that as well.
I think Aubrey Plaza is going to do a line of coke on stage.
I hope so.
I hope so. Please do. With Jenna Ortega. That'd
please.
Be fine.
Right.
Bring that back.
God bless America.
Make that a thing.
Now it's going to get worse in my head.
All right.
Don't make it weird.
Everybody, remember, too late. Remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch or tell your own sexy scream lines, buy popcorn. Hello, Sydney.
That didn't sound sexy. That just sounded murdery.
Mm-hmm. I was practicing.
Mm.
For you.